This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Foodborne illness is a serious issue. We all go out to eat, and I'm sure that we all have that story about the time we got sick. But it's more than an inconvenience. It's a horrible experience. It could be life-threatening depending on the circumstances. So what's being done locally to keep you safe when you go out to eat at a restaurant? And what are your options when things go bad? On the other side, think about the restaurant owner. What if they've had a great reputation for many years, serving great meals, having service to the community, but a bad batch in the kitchen one day, people got sick, now their reputation is damaged? Should they lose their business because of that experience? How we can all move forward as a community? When is it time to go back? Call in as we talk about this. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. Now, when we have these conversations today, we want to avoid naming local restaurants by name today because it's just not fair. They're not here to defend themselves. We're not here to talk about that one time, that bad time. We want to have a more elevated conversation about how to keep San Antonio safe, how to keep you and your family safe when you go out to eat. So call in and talk about that experience, but don't name the restaurant because it's just not cool. But do call in. The number is 210-614-8980. With us today to tell us more about this important topic, Anita Kurian. She's the Assistant Director in the Communicable Disease Division of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Phil Willis is here. He's the Director of Training and Products for the Texas Restaurant Association. And on the line is Bill Marler. He is the food safety and personal injury attorney and publisher of Food Safety News. It's great to have you all here this afternoon. And again, the number is 210-614-8980. So, Bill Marler, you're on the line. Tell me about how big of a deal is this?
Well, it's great to be with you, and it's great to be on a panel with such esteemed folks. But, you know, put this in context. The CDC says about 48 million Americans are sickened every year from a foodborne illness. About 125,000 are hospitalized, and there are 3,000 deaths. So I think from anybody's perspective, that's a big deal. You know, there's a lot of people doing a lot of good work, both locally, statewide, and nationally, to try to prevent these things. But it is a, you know, a significant public health problem.
Anita Kurian at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. The health department deals with all sorts of issues, immunizations, trying to make sure dealing with people with diabetes. There's a lot on the plate, no pun intended, at the health department. Where does making sure that our restaurants are serving safe meals, where does that fit?
Food safety issues for us is an important public health problem. On an average, you know, we find about 200 food-related issues reported to us on monthly basis. But not all of them are restaurant-associated, or not all of them are because of food contamination. Most of those issues that get reported to us are about, you know, maybe cleanliness of the restaurant, maybe the not having adequate soap in washrooms, linens not being clean. But as far as illnesses associated with restaurants, of those 190 to 200 complaints that we get, only 1 to 2 are attributed as foodborne illness outbreaks. So it is a big priority for us. Food safety is number one concern for us in this community.
Is it a year-round sort of an issue, or are there any times of the year where it gets worse than others?
It is year-round, but typically we tend to see more complaints coming our way during the summer season, and that's because that's when there are more opportunities for food abuse or temperature abuse of food to happen, meaning food that's cooked, we recommend not be left out for more than 2 hours at room temperature. But during summer months, temperatures tend to be higher, 90 degrees or higher. And then, so like I said, so during the summer months, we tend to get a more higher number of complaints, and that's because of opportunities for food abuse or temperature abuse of the food arise much more higher during these seasons.
And Phil Willis at the Texas Restaurant Association, you're the Director of Training and Products. How much training do food handlers get?
Food handlers get a which is mandatory now statewide. It wasn't a couple of years ago. It went live at 2015, mandatory food handler for all employees that work in restaurants, and it's a two-year certification. It's a two-hour training. They have a 40-question test at the end. It is a ANSI-certified test, American National Standards Institute exam, and then they get a two-year certification. Every 2 years, they have to go back through the class and through the training again.
And they get issued a certification.
They get issued a certificate, and then on top of that, in each particular restaurant, there will be on site at all times, there will be a ServSafe manager, trainer or instructor type person that has a 5-year certification, and they have to go through that every 5 years to get recertified as a ServSafe manager.
Is this an online process?
ServSafe Manager, you can take the class online, but you have to be proctored for the exam, which means that somebody has to be there to physically watch you take the exam. Food Handler is online. It's a non-proctored. That's the 2 year, basically deals with hygiene, pathogens, time and temp. It's a good entry way into somebody that's going to become a ServSafe manager, which is a more extensive course.
But if I want to be a work in a restaurant in the kitchen, I have to get one of these certificates.
If you're the person in charge, you're going to have ServSafe manager. If you're a dishwasher but you do prep, you're going to have food handler. If you're a cook on the line, you're going to have food handler. If you're a hostess in the front of the house and you do to-go orders, you should also have food handler, and bartenders have to have food handler, and then all servers have to have food handler.
And this online video that you watch, is that in different multiple languages?
It is in multiple languages, not as many as we would like it to be. It's in English and Spanish, Korean. There's like 5 languages. We were speaking earlier. We don't have it in Persian, but we're gonna work towards that. So we feel like that's an important way of the melting pot. So we know that culturally and the way people understand things needs to be in their home language. And so that's what we're working towards.
And so what is the objective of having this process? What are you trying to achieve?
With Food Handler?
Yeah. What do you want to raise their awareness of what their responsibilities are?
We want them to understand about hygiene, cross-contamination, time and temp abuse. Those are the 3 major factors that can cause some pretty serious illnesses. Also, the other thing that people miss is if an employee shows up to work and they're working in a culture where it's not so nice for them to call in sick, so they worry about their job. So it's a cultural thing, too, from what the restaurant's perspective is. If somebody calls in and says, I'm sick, I've been up with the stomachache, you don't want them at work.
Right. So, but then that person doesn't get paid that day, generally, if you don't have sick time off. And then so that person comes in and works, and maybe they spread whatever it is that they got going on. So that's something that's being talked about in San Antonio as we passed an ordinance along those lines to some controversy. So we're going to take a break now. We're going to go to the phone lines when we come back. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Foodborne illness outbreaks, what to look out for, how do you treat it, home remedies maybe, how have you dealt with this? And we don't want to talk about individual restaurants, but you can talk about your experiences and what you think needs to be done in order to keep you safe when you go out to eat. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Foodborne illness outbreaks. You don't want to go to a restaurant, have a great meal, and come home and find out it's something went bad. That's just something that we don't like to see, and the restaurants don't want to see either. It's a bad business model. You want people to enjoy your food and tell everyone what a great experience you had. How do we ensure that, and how do we make sure that restaurants don't have to face a terrible reputation for a long, long time because of one bad day? You know, how do we make it fair? And you know, there's got to be a way to balance this out. Okay, let's go on to Angela. Angela, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is, how do we as the public know the difference between a foodborne illness that we've contracted or an allergy or a food allergy or some other problem that we might have? I've been told by doctors that foodborne illnesses don't show up right away? It takes a day, 2 days. I'm not sure.
All right, Angela, those are great questions. So let's go over to Anita Curian. She's the Assistant Director of Communicable Diseases at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. So first of all, how do you know that it was the food?
And I have to say this right at the onset, you cannot make the distinction based on signs and symptoms if this is a foodborne illness of infectious nature or foodborne illness because of non-infectious or food allergies. That's very hard to say based on signs and symptoms because most of these foodborne illnesses, the onset is pretty quick and the duration of illness may last anywhere from 4 to 5 days to a week to 10 days depending upon your health condition itself. The only way to distinguish this is to seek medical attention and then a test. You can get your stool tested. You can do stool cultures, and if it's infectious nature, it'll grow up an infectious agent.
What's the most common problem that you're going to have if you get sick from a restaurant?
Like I said, it's not just restaurant. Any food that you consume, even in your household, that's contaminated.
Okay, what's the most common problem?
It's diarrhea. You can have diarrhea.
What would be the cause of that?
It can be a number of causes. All foodborne infectious agents exhibit symptoms that's manifested as diarrhea. You can have diarrhea, fever, pain abdomen, abdominal cramps, severe cramps, nausea, vomiting. So like I said, it's very difficult to distinguish the agent or the reason or the etiology of this based on signs and symptoms because almost all foodborne illnesses manifest as diarrhea, pain abdomen, fever, nausea, vomiting.
Do you think, Anita, that sometimes people go to a restaurant, go have a great meal, come home, someone gets sick, and they say it was the restaurant, but it wasn't?
That's quite possible. And that is why, and most often those go unreported too. So we encourage, it's like if you feel it's a restaurant, we are encouraging folks to call the health department. You can either call 311 or 210-207-8876 and report. Even if suspicious, if you suspect it's a restaurant, please report it to us so we can get in there in a timely manner and then inspect the facility.
All right, let me go to Will. Now, Will, you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, go ahead.
Great show. Anyway, I think that it would behoove the city to have code compliance and have plumbing inspectors go into these restaurants and make sure that they haven't adjusted the plumbing. I work in the business. I see it all the time. They'll get some cook or dishwasher to try to do some makeshift plumbing, and, it's awful what we see out there.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. Phil Willis, Director of Training and Products for the Texas Restaurant Association, is there any concern about bad plumbing being a problem?
I have not had any calls on that specifically. I would like to kind of go back just a step.
Yeah.
The lady before that called said a day or two for foodborne illness. It's actually 30 minutes to 6 weeks when it can become active. Intestinal things take a lot longer sometimes to rear their head, but you can actually eat and 30 minutes later, have a bad stomach ache. And it's usually sometimes, it's a hygiene. It's fecal matter, and it's a hygiene problem. So, and that can happen at the house if teenagers cooking your breakfast for you as a mom and he didn't or she didn't wash her hands good.
Or you have a pet who's infected coming in contact mm-hmm. with pet. There are other exposures that can happen besides food that can cause foodborne illnesses.
Let me go to Bill Marler. He's the food safety and personal injury attorney, publisher of Food Safety News. What do you think is the biggest issue that needs to be tackled? What's the low-hanging fruit to try to improve food safety?
I'll answer that question. I do want to comment. I completely agree with both of your guests. Putting it in context, 48 million Americans get a foodborne illness every year, but the ones that we're ever able to tie to a particular food item or a particular place is an incredibly, incredibly small percentage, and that's exactly what your guests said. Incubation period for norovirus can be just hours. Clostridium perfringens, hours. But hepatitis A can be weeks. Listeria can be up to 70 days. So generally speaking, When you come home from a restaurant and you get sick the next morning, it's likely, in my experience, not the restaurant that you ate at the day before. It may have been something that you ate 2 days or 3 days before. And I completely agree with the doctor. The only way to make sure you know what the problem is usually a stool culture. And if you're really sick, it may be a blood culture. But the low-hanging fruit issue has a lot to do with the supply chain. Most foodborne illness outbreaks don't happen at restaurants. Restaurants generally do a great job. The health departments, the environmental health divisions do a great job. You know, Texas, the training programs in Texas far exceed most states. So, but they do happen. But the real issue is the food supply chain, making sure that the food that's coming into the restaurant is, in fact, not contaminated. Because a restaurant is in a very difficult spot if, you know, especially ready-to-eat food comes into a restaurant contaminated. So, you know, the bigger issue and the sort of low-hanging fruit, in a sense, is for, you know, industry, government, and consumers to work together to make sure that the food that comes into restaurants, grocery stores, and into people's homes is not contaminated in the first place.
And that can happen in the fields, even before
absolutely
it starts moving through trucking and all that other kind of stuff.
There's the outbreak this, you know, just last spring, romaine lettuce that came from Yuma. 205 people sick, 5 people dead. About 30 people with acute kidney failure, that's mostly children. That was sold in grocery stores and in restaurants throughout the United States. Very little that a consumer can do, very little that a restaurateur can do to combat that. That's got to be combated on the at the farm level and in the manufacturing level, and that requires, you know, good government inspections and
resources,
you know,
and dedication.
Compliance.
So we're going to take a break here, Bill. We brought up some great points. We're going to come back and talk about this in a few more minutes. So go back to talking about foodborne illness outbreaks. You can call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're taking a break for Pitch Drive and then more Source after that. Stay tuned. And welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Foodborne illness, something you definitely don't want to get, but it does happen. We have isolated incidences and we do have outbreaks. How do we make sure that these are kept in check? How do we make sure that when you go out to eat and eat at home, maybe people at home should be taking some of these classes that you offer online to find out food safety. No one ever... Oh, I learned it when I worked in restaurants, but it was never really taught to me at home. 210, you can call in 210-614-8980 to call into The Source this afternoon. And Rudy is on the line. Rudy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question or a comment. When I used to work at a restaurant, or actually I don't know if anybody's ever heard of soda machines, like also giving people salmonella. While I was working at a restaurant, we were forced to, trained to dip the nozzles in bleach overnight.
All right. So that's interesting. So from vending machines, is there an issue of food safety there? Let me go to Bill Marler. Maybe he is knows about that because he's with Food Safety News.
You know, there are all sorts of, you know, ways to prevent foodborne illnesses, and obviously using good cleaning techniques and solutions is the right way. Foodborne illness outbreaks can happen, you know, in a variety of ways. And so there's a variety of ways of combating it. Paying attention to the good people at the San Antonio Environmental Health Association the food inspectors will help restaurants go a long way to prevent foodborne illness.
Awesome. When you drink from a Coke can, I mean, how dirty is that Coke can? You know, you just pop the top and it's been sitting around. Sometimes you can tell that they're kind of grimy. Wiping that on your shirt sleeve, that's not really a way to ensure you're not going to get sick. But it seems to be something people need to be aware of. Can you get sick from a dirty Coke can top, Bill?
You know, in 25 years of handling foodborne illness outbreaks across the country and across the world, I've never had a case involving that. Doesn't mean that it couldn't happen. But, you know, the whole idea, frankly, and one of your earlier guests said this, is, you know, the real vulnerable population are the very young, the very old, and pregnant women and immune compromised, which is a fairly significant chunk of our population. And, you know, restaurants need to be aware that that vulnerable population consumes food there. And, you know, their goal is to keep things clean, keep hot things hot and cold things cold. And they, if they do that, they likely will never hear from me.
Right, and keep things labeled. Let's go to Bob. Bob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. Love this topic, this subject. I'm curious, and I'm glad that you brought up the home issue, but what about food trucks?
All right, Bob, thank you for the call. Food trucks, that is something that the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District does look at as well. Let's go to Dr. Anita Kurian. I didn't call you doctor before because they didn't put it on my sheet. I didn't mean any disrespect by not acknowledging your doctor.
None taken.
So talk about food trucks.
So we do have 42 registered sanitarians on our staff who go out and regularly inspect all food establishments, including those food trucks. So those are regular inspections done. We categorize all of these food establishments into three main categories. So risk one categories are mainly your convenience stores. Risk two category establishments are your fast food joints. Risk three category food establishments are your full, sit-down restaurants. And each of these food establishments in each of these categories get inspected year-round. So risk one category food establishments get inspected once a year because the risk of contamination, risk of foodborne illness associated with these convenience stores are expected or anticipated to be minimum because they don't prep or cook food there. It's just hold, store, serve, but.
I mean, like the little hot dogs rolling on those rollers for several weeks at a time?
Those are associated with foodborne illnesses, but it's not like a foodborne restaurant where you are prepping the food. There's more chances you have raw meat, poultry,
okay,
that can lead to cross-contamination. So risk one category food establishments get inspected once a year. Risk two category food establishments get inspected twice a year. Risk three food establishments get inspected three times a year. Now, in addition to this, like I said, on a monthly basis, we have about 190 to 200 calls from concerned citizens. After having visited these restaurants, they call up and complain as well. And each of these complaints triggers an inspection by our sanitarians within 48 hours of these inspections. So even though I say these categories get once, twice, or three times, in reality, they may be getting inspected more than what's been allocated.
And food trucks get treated as a restaurant?
As a restaurant, yeah. They have one or two or three even based on the number of violations they've had in the past as well.
Okay, and so Phil Willis, you're the director of training and products for the Texas Restaurant Association. In your view, do you see food trucks getting they're treated the same as any other kind of restaurant?
I do see that, and I see the health department handling that way. In Austin, we have 1,600 food trucks and food courts, and it's growing statewide. There's these parks that are popping up, and the potable water is an issue and a concern for the health department that they're making sure that they do have water that's available, and then restrooms there on site. That's always been a concern, at the beginning of the food trucks is where are people washing their hands and going to the restroom, making sure that the food truck is actually designed with hand sinks in there. So they're washing their hands every 15, 20 minutes is normally what I preach when I'm doing a class or a classroom style class. I tell people wash your hands about every, 20 minutes or when you change jobs.
But you mean like I was chopping onions and now I'm going to prep something different. I should wash my hands.
Wash your hands. Take your gloves off if you're wearing them. Wash your hands and start over.
Okay. So, Dr. Kurian, how many restaurants or food establishments do we have in San Antonio that y'all are responsible for overseeing?
Approximately 8,300.
And how many inspectors do y'all have?
We have 42 inspectors, registered sanitarians.
And are these, some of them dedicated to just showing up spontaneously at places to do spot inspections?
We have a calendar of inspections based on those risk categorizations that I said. Plus, we also have inspectors who respond to citizen complaints. So there's no surprise visits. Most of the visits are scheduled based on the risk categorizations. Again, I'm repeating myself. Then also, there are surprise visits in response to a citizen complaint within 48 hours of the complaint.
So let me make sure I understand this correctly. So if I own a restaurant, then it's unlikely that a food inspector is just going to show up out of the blue. I'm not going to, and give me a surprise inspection.
Sometimes that does happen. Again, there are a lot of variables that go into this too. You know, we also look at the violations that a particular restaurant has had in the past as well, and the number of complaints we've received on these restaurants.
Okay, if it's under radar, then you can expect more visits.
Yes.
Now, there's been discussion in San Antonio about changing the way that sort of the grading format. Mm-hmm. What's being talked about?
So right now, every restaurant gets inspected on a 47-item questionnaire. So everybody's these questionnaires are based off the FDA model. So everybody starts with a score of 100. And this 47-item is categorized into three sections. So there are about 20 items in Section 1, and about 13 or 12 in Section 2, and there are Section 3. And the Section 1 items, if there is a violation cited by a sanitarian on any of these Section 1 items, each of those items, you get a negative score of 3. So that's how the points get taken off your score of 100. Section 2, any violations in Section 2, each items will cost you 2 points. Section 3, any violations will cost you 1 point. So at the end of the 47-item inspections, the sanitarians then come up with a score. So if you have a 92... Any score below 69 or below is considered a fail. You fail the inspection, and then you'll have to take corrective actions within three days, or within 10 days, or within a month's time. That's determined by the sanitarians.
Does the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, do your inspectors have the authority to shut down a restaurant then and
there?
Yes,
they do. Certain things like rodent infestations, insect rodent infestations, sewage backup, no electricity, no running water, these are triggers for immediate shutdown of the restaurants.
And how often does that happen?
Not that often, luckily. Fortunately for us, not that often, but like I said earlier, restaurants are, they try to perform in good faith. Everybody wants to do the right thing. So fortunately, we don't see that many instances of these.
There's a level of transparency that I can go onto the website and I can find out what the inspections are.
Yes, you can search the inspection reports by the food establishment. Just type in the name. It's available on our website, www.sanantonio.gov/health. You will see the score for not just the score, but when was how last three inspections, last five inspections, when the most recent inspections. You have all those information readily available on our website.
Do you also inspect the jail? The food preparation there?
Right now, that falls under the county. We sometimes not at this time.
So Bill Marler.
But that is being inspected by another entity.
Someone is inspecting
yes.
that. Bill Marler at the Food Safety News. Does it vary much from city to city?
Oh, substantially. San Antonio. And many of the larger cities in Texas are, well ahead of the game in, many cities. It is really just a commitment, partly by, government to do the inspections, but also partly by having, good relations with the Restaurant Association tool, that are supportive of that. Because, in any system, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and there's lots of evidence that when there's an outbreak at a restaurant, it drives other restaurants down in the number of people going. So there's a real incentive for people to work together to make sure, you know, that the system operates appropriately.
Sure, but there's always going to be bad actors. What to do about that if you find yourself that you did get a bad meal, a bad plate? What happens? So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. What are your options? Can you take them to court? The number is 210-614-8980. Maybe you can write them up on Yelp or something. Does that mean anything? 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about foodborne illness outbreaks and what happens when things go bad. What recourse do you have? Bill Marler is with us. He's a food safety and personal injury attorney. He's the publisher of Food Safety News. Can I sue someone because a restaurant because the food was bad? Bill?
The answer is yes, if you have the evidence to support it. And this gets back to having a stool culture that's positive for a virus or a bacteria that can be linked back to the restaurant. Usually that's also the necessity of, unfortunately, having more people that are sick. So there's no question of where the source of the outbreak was. Then sometimes it gets into not only just where the restaurant source was, but then also what food item. So many of these foodborne illness outbreaks and then the litigation that comes afterwards, it can get complex. The complex is, you know, where the outbreak occurred and then specifically what food item it was. So there may be multiple defendants. And in many respects, most of the time when I'm dealing in these cases, it's not the restaurant that's sort of the target. It's the product that came into the restaurant that contaminated the product that then the consumers consumed.
Does the person who's bringing, the plaintiff who's bringing the lawsuit, do they need to show some neglect by the restaurant, that they were being not being reasonable in the way that they were caring for the food?
The short answer is no. A food item is a product, just like a car. And if you're driving down the highway and your car explodes, you don't necessarily need to show exactly why your car exploded. You know, if the engine exploded, if you get a foodborne illness in a restaurant, the presumption is that somebody did something wrong. Sometimes it takes a little bit to shake out whether or not the product was contaminated before it got to the restaurant or was contaminated by an employee. But the food you eat shouldn't have a pathogen in it that could sicken or kill you.
And when we talk about sicken, we just don't mean like you're going to spend a couple of days with a terrible gastrointestinal situation.
Yeah.
But people have liver and kidney failure, which could mean really horrible outcomes, expensive long-term.
The cases of people who get sick for a day or two, those aren't the kinds of cases that should, you know, spend time in a courtroom. What I'm talking about, and I'll give you an example. I'm representing a little boy, 11-year-old, who spent 6 months in ICU, lost his large intestine, suffered a stroke, is going to require a kidney transplant in November. And it was all from eating soy nut butter, a substitute for peanut butter that was contaminated with E. coli. So these things can be really serious. And, you know, the Restaurant Association and public health, environmental health, you know, it's their responsibility and duty, and they try to live up to that to prevent outbreaks like that.
So, Dr. Anita Kurian, there's talk of adopting this ABC placard that would be going up in restaurants depending on, you know, what their score is when they get the health inspection. That is something that is, has it yet to be decided that's going to be happening?
Those discussions are happening. It's very much in its infancy stages, but some of the restaurants who get 90 and higher scores are on voluntary basis posting those score letter grade.
So it's not required, but they're bragging.
Not at this time.
They're
yes.
saying, hey, we got an, you know, but it doesn't. And so I know that this Texas Restaurant Association is not really crazy about the ABC grades, Phil Willis. I mean, you all think that it's really doesn't really provide all the information that a customer should get?
We prefer the point system. We just think it's a little bit more detailed. The you can walk into your favorite restaurant and ask for their health score, and they have to present it to you. They're supposed to be posted. In most cases, they are. Most people will have a frame deal saying, if you'd like to see our health score, you can certainly do that. So all you have to do is ask. If you have a, if you go to a mixed use complex and there's a restaurant and a B restaurant, which restaurant are you going to dine in?
Yeah, well, and it only goes to A, B, C. There's nothing below C, yes, that, according to the plan.
And a D, D is a fail.
They do, but they don't.
In Seattle, we've, instead of doing the A, B, C, we have smiling faces, a sort of no look, and then a frowny face. So, and so, I think if you walk into a place with a frowny face, it's probably, you know, you're taking a known risk.
Wow. So they don't want to get too judgmental with an A, B, C on there in Seattle. So Phil Willis, when you go into a restaurant, what do you look for to make sure that your food's going to be up to code?
I want to walk in from the parking lot and the parking lot be clean, the hostess stand be organized and clean. I want to see them wiping down menus. I want to see waiters cleaning the tables. I don't want to see rags in their pocket. I want to look around and make sure that people are using sanitary buckets for the rags, and they're putting them back in there to make sure that they're being cleaned before the next use. I also am guilty like everybody else. I will look at Yelp. I will also look at health department scores that are out there for the public to see. I don't completely go by all of that, but I tend to stay in my little area of downtown Austin, but I do focus on the cleanliness of the restaurant.
Do you ever go to a restaurant, sit down, you pick up the fork, it's kind of crummy, and you just set that down and get up and walk out?
Yes.
Okay. So, Bill Maher, what do you look for? What are the red flags?
Well, yeah, I'm a farm. I do all of that, although I probably would eat at your restaurant. I would do all of that. I have a tendency to try to control my own life. So if I'm at home, you know, I'll make salad. But if I'm out, instead of having a salad, I'll have cooked vegetables. I try to keep, you know, as much things, you know, hot when I meet. I travel all over the world, and, you know, on food safety topics, and I just tend to, you know, like to have everything as cooked as well as possible and kind of avoid fresh fruits and vegetables until I can get home and wash them myself.
Dr. Kurian, are some people tougher than others when it comes to getting sick from food illness?
Absolutely. Bill had already mentioned this earlier. We have children who are less than 5 years, elderly over 65 years, pregnant women, people with underlying medical conditions like diabetes, hypertension, they tend to be immunosuppressed. They are most vulnerable to foodborne illnesses. Children under five are about more likely to come down with salmonella compared to a healthy young adult.
Yeah, but even if you're like The Rock, you know, you can be brought down to your knees through a bad plate of food.
Yes, and it depends upon the infectious dose you consume, too. You know, how contaminated was that food?
And so what's the best thing I should do? If somehow I get sick, I don't know if it was because of my cooking or because I went to the restaurant, what do I need to do?
You need to, I would, again, stress upon this. If you think it's a restaurant that's causing you, call the health department. Let us intervene in a timely manner, because what I see indeed in our daily practices, by the time we get involved, it's too late to do anything. Most of the food has been discarded or practices have been changed. So notify us and seek medical attention. And
what about like Pepto-Bismol, plenty of fluids?
Yes. Those over-the-counter medications, yes, certainly help you. But if you think your symptoms are worsening, then seek medical attention promptly. You know, CDC.
What is the red flags and I should go to the ER?
Dehydration. Fever, persistent high fever, diarrhea that's not resolving after 2 to 3 days.
And if people don't get on top of it, it could get really bad.
It can get really bad. And I would just want to add, on top of all the issues that you had mentioned about noticing in a restaurant, I would say for me, the foremost thing is, you know, check the restrooms first. If there are no soaps, running water to wash your hands, that's the biggest red flag.
And then get out.
Get out as fast as you can.
All right,
yes.
Dr. Anita Kurian, San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Phil Willis is with the Texas Restaurant Association. Bill Marler, he is a personal injury attorney, publisher of Food Safety News. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. Bon appetit.